and welcome to another episode of Bad End Podcast. It's episode 80. I'm Katie McCarthy, and I'm joined, as always, by Joshua Clickstow and Kyle Cookstow. And I wasn't here last week, and I'm back. I'm ready to podcast. I have a new microphone, so I might sound clearer than usual, which is maybe a little exciting. Who knows? Maybe I sound worse. This will be a test of if the budget snowball is better than whatever this big microphone I have now is, where it's not a USB one, so I have a whole situation going on. It's how you know it's good, when you have to plug it into something and then you have to plug that into your computer. That's how you know it's legit. Anyway, how have you guys been doing since last time I talked to you guys?
I've been since Josh and I talked last episode, I've been like, I think I might have a reputation in a Bad End community for hating every like big game, which is not true, but I had a big game week the past 2 weeks. Like after talking to Josh, I played Valorant, I played Fall Guys, and played more Warzone. So I feel like maybe episode 80, we're going to do like a mainstreamer podcast.
It's the triple A.
It's like, yeah, it's like an alternate universe Bad End where like all we play is like Assassin's Creed and Call of Duty.
Honestly, Valorant and Warzone has been like my life, but I've gotten really into anime again these last couple weeks. So maybe I'll talk a little bit about that.
Ooh.
I've fallen off anime. As someone whose partner literally works in anime, it's kind of ironic like how he got a job in anime and then I immediately just stopped watching anything new. Like I watched Japan Sinks. That was an anime I watched recently. But I only...
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Which I'm a fan of that director, whatever, not filmmaker, but like... God, like anything Masaki Yuasa does, I get really into. Like I was really into Devil May Cry Baby. Yeah.
His shit's so good.
His shit's really good. And he had two anime this year, but I didn't like, what is it? Aizukan, whatever. I couldn't get into that one. But like, I love Devilman Crybaby. I love Ping Pong. Tatami Galaxy is like one of my top five anime ever. And just everything he does, or most things he does, I get really invested in. And Japan Sinks is no exception. Very good.
Where's it on?
Netflix. Which is great. Shit. So you can just watch it all.
I gotta see that.
Yeah, it's really good. It's like 10 episodes or so. It's really good. But yeah, Josh, what anime have you been watching?
Oh, I've been on a shonen kick, baby, as always. But we can talk about those later. Let's talk some games first.
Let's talk about I want to continue the Valorant conversation, because
yeah, I'm curious at what you have to say about Valorant, Kyle.
I played Valorant. I played like, it felt like a long time, but I think in retrospect I played like 3 games total. Because you didn't tell me this, but the games are fucking long.
How long? Are they like MOBA long?
Kind of. It's the rounds themselves aren't long, but there's like 16 rounds or something. Mm. So you play every single match. And it's also like your wins sort of compound in a way that like, I don't know what it is specifically, but just like the way that they signal your wins and losses as a team together makes you sort of feel closer to your team than something like Counter-Strike, which is sort of like one of the closest comparisons, where like people switch teams in Counter-Strike all the time. And even though the sides flip, like it's not like you care if the terrorists or counter-terrorists win a given match. So like it's long. That was really surprising. I think like what Josh was saying though, on the last podcast, there is this like, it doesn't like the, like something about the art style just does feel like very tight. It's like the best way to say it. I think, I mean, it feels a lot like CSGO kind of through the lens of like Team Fortress or Overwatch or whatever, but it's not like near as extravagant as those games, especially like Overwatch. I guess even TF2, like I was really surprised like playing Valorant and sort of people are doing all their abilities and stuff, but none of them are like so swingy like you can get with Overwatch. Like in Overwatch, you know, someone does an ult and like they can team wipe and that's like a huge setback and you know the game can be lost on that point. But in Valorant, like people have abilities and some abilities are really good, but like even if someone like does like the best thing and like wipes a team, you know, you're still playing over 16 rounds or whatever. So each given match is sort of like de-risked a little bit, which I think is probably has a positive effect in the community. So yeah, I'm still like feeling it out and trying to like feel like where it fits. It's weird. Like part of me would say like, I'd rather play this over Counter-Strike for like a quick hit, like first person shooter thing. But where like the fact you have to play really long matches is kind of like, it's hard because I can play Counter-Strike for 10 minutes and get like a good experience out of it. For Valorant, like if I'm sitting down, I know I've got to like commit to like 30 or 45 minutes worth of matches.
Well, they have deathmatch now, which is really fast. It doesn't take more than 5 minutes to do a deathmatch. And then there's also another mode called Spike Rush, which is like the not first to 13 type mode, where it's just like really fast paced, quick in and out type thing. So if you want like something faster, I would go with that. I believe, by the way, that the way that this Valorant works is it's first team to reach 20 or to win 13 rounds wins. So you can play up to like 26 rounds,
yeah,
or even more if you go into overtime, like in ranked mode. But like everyone has to agree to go into overtime to do that. So it's an interesting way of balancing that. And I like that it feels tactical, like even between rounds, there's the whole like economy thing. They have that in Counter-Strike too, where it's like we play an econ round where you don't have that much money, so you want to save the money till the next round so you don't buy anything. You just use pistols so that the next round you can have an advantage over the enemy team. Because when you die, you lose your gun. So just like a money that's thrown away.
I'm really surprised they kept that because I don't like... that shit in Counter-Strike to me has always felt like sort of silly. Like it's never felt so meaningful because I don't even know how to describe it. It's like, it's so weird because like even in something like Counter-Strike, like, yeah, you can maybe buy like an op or something and have like a really good gun for a round or two, but like you can still just get like totally blindsided with the kill or someone kills you. And then like, it doesn't matter because you have to buy the stuff again the next round. And like for all the stuff that like Riot did, I think to sort of make their version of a CSGO thing, like the buying stuff staying in is really weird. Like it's sort of the same way, like, you know, it reminds me a little bit of like Last Hits in a MOBA, where like that was a thing that existed and they sort of have like been carried forward in a few ways for better or for worse. And like, but like, and I think a meta is obviously like developed around like this concept of last hitting, but it's weird that like someone looks at Counter-Strike and they're like, you know, it needs to stay in, buy rounds versus why not like even something like, you know, why not something like Hearthstone where you just get fixed money each round and it goes up. So there's like a linear power curve between rounds or something. Like the fact that there's this choice there, maybe it's because it's early on and they're going to do like way more stuff with it, but it feels weird right now. It's like, why is this thing here?
So I would say that the econ stuff is a big part of the tactical element of Valorant, whereas last hitting is kind of like the brainless, you should just be able to do this at all times thing in MOBAs. So what I like about Valorant is that it is very tactical. Like your aim, you can be pretty good at the game without having great aim, which sounds counterintuitive. And that's like something that is very hard to do in Counter-Strike because all of the like skill shots and all of the quote utility abilities in Counter-Strike, like flashbangs and grenades and Molotov cocktails, those are all things that you have to be really good at using as well. So like you need to know all the lineups of like, when I throw this at exactly this point, it's going to land on the bomb site. And those are all added skills. Whereas in Valorant, you can like, there's a character that like shows you a mini map and you can choose where to deploy your smoke grenades exactly. So you don't have to like develop that skill on its own. So Valorant makes that stuff a lot more approachable, so that your team can mostly dedicate their focus to the tactics and the gunplay, which I think
is cool. I think that's like good stuff.
But I think another element of that is playing the economy correctly, because you'll notice like with a bunch of beginners, like they don't focus on like saving their money. And so they're just like always running around with the shitty gun, which puts them at a disadvantage over the other team. Whereas if they had saved a round, they can get more money. And then, so it adds another element of consequence to it that goes round by round, where if you kill the enemy and they're holding an op, like you said, that's a big deal for your team because you're that's throwing away like 4,500 of the enemy team's cash that takes like rounds for them to build up. So it adds like another element of tactics to the game that I like and feels like it has a rationale for being in the game. I think it adds a lot to the way the tactics work. Do I think it's creative, like that there might be a better solution for that? Maybe. I can't really think of what that would be off the top of my head. But as I've played the game more, I like the feeling of like buying a gun on a new round, coordinating with your team and going, hey, we're going to save this round so that next round we can get really good guns. So we increase our odds of beating the other team, and like setting different objectives within the team based on like how much resources you guys have.
But I guess like the other thing about that though is that the arcs of econ still only happen over like two, like maybe three matches. Like if you have like a decent round, you can more or less buy like anything. And then also it's not like all the guns are just get, it's not like the guns are, the more expensive ones are directly better. Like they still do the like positive and negatives thing where like some guns you'll pick because they have different aspects that the more expensive guns don't have and like vice versa. So it's not like, oh, I save up money and now buy the better gun. Like you could be good with a gun that's like relatively cheap and just keep buying that gun. I think like what I would be interested in seeing is like some sort of like investment or something. Like, is there a way to like invest in like passive benefits to your team where like, okay, well, like it'd be a really cool decision, Josh, right? Where if it's like, okay, well, Josh really wants to buy like whatever the op equivalent is this round. But what if instead we all put like 200 of what we got from the last round into the pot? That way all of our team gets to start out with like a 5% damage bonus for the first 30 seconds of the game or something. And that becomes like more of an interesting decision. I'm not saying that has to be the solution, but it's like, it's weird where they just sort of, they did all this really cool stuff for accessibility of the game and like the characters. And like you're saying, like baking like skill shot ideas into actual character design, which is like super cool. And they just took this money thing and it feels like they were just like, okay, put it over. We're going to do that too. And I'm not saying that's like some like condemning the game at all. It just sort of stands out as what feels like the sort of oversight, because I'm like, oh, like we're beyond that. Like we're in a world where Counter-Strike's been out for 20 years. Where's the next step of that system? Because I do think what you're saying, like having to worry about econ in a shooter is a compelling thing. But right now in Valorant, to me, it sort of feels like a little bit of like, okay, well, we've been here before. Like let me see what you guys are really thinking about with this.
You're not convinced that it's like the best approach.
No, I'm not saying it has to be the best approach. Like it works, right? Like it totally works. It works in Counter-Strike. It works in Valorant. It's just sort of, it's strange to see where they're like, they looked at stuff like Counter-Strike and said like, okay, we're going to bring that over. Like that's going to come into the game too. And I'm also, I mean, to be clear, I'm not like by any means a pro level Counter-Strike or Valorant player. So maybe there's way more nuance to the system that it's like way above my pay grade or whatever. But, but yeah, like it's funny to see like, because it is right. Like this game is trying to be a sort of Counter-Strike ish game. So it's talking about what it's taking from Counter-Strike is not like folly or whatever. So
one, yeah. Funny thing about the buying system stuff is that when I think a lot about like what got me into League of Legends and what got me into specifically League of Legends, I guess I think that the buying items and leveling up system really pulled me in, because you get that carrot on a stick reward factor of when you do really well and you get kills and you go back to base and you buy stuff and you come back and you're super strong compared to all the other players. And you get to exercise that right off the bat against other people who are also in a competitive setting with you, which is like such a great personification of the carrot on a stick system that is employed in a lot of single player games, but don't feel as gratifying because you're using them against computers and stuff like that. And I think that's one thing that really compelled me about League of Legends. And it translates over really well to Valorant, where I did well in a round. The next round, I have like a bunch of cash to spend and I can get this gun that I really wanted to get. And I feel that sense of like, I have all this power, all this potential, and I can get like a lot of kills and carry that into the next round and snowball that and like carry my team type of thing. Or if I get killed here, I just lost all that cash that I just spent all this time trying to earn. And that's just like a really, yeah, there's that sense of investment. I think that keeps me coming back in Valorant as a little carrot on a stick. But then there's the separate thing of like playing to win, which is a separate system, because getting kills often is not synonymous with winning a round or winning the game.
Right.
Because you have a lot of like utility characters and ways that you can play the game strategically that does not involve you wiping out the opposing team. And while it's obviously better for you to kill everyone on the opposite team, you don't have to do that to win. And there's some characters who work best when you're not doing that to win. You're using your abilities to help your team figure out where the enemies are and all that jazz. So I like the kind of tightrope that they walk with that in Valorant. And I think that's one of the things that I like about it. But you're right that it's not necessarily something that is super different from what was happening in Counter-Strike. But at the same time, I like this, the art style and just that, just the pristine premium primo feel of and everything's I don't know if you noticed what I was talking about last time, where everything feels really quiet.
Yeah.
Like
it's quiet.
It's quiet, but it's just like, it feels fucking clean. Like that's a part of it, you know, is like this, the dynamics of that game are really good. And I think a lot of games don't have dynamics.
One thing that I think really helps too, and it's the last thing I'll say about Valorant, so we can move on. But I think part of that is that they like perfectly tuned like the TTK, like the time to kill.
Oh yeah.
Where it's like longer than Counter-Strike for sure, because Counter-Strike has respawns, but it's not as long as Overwatch, which is more about like really big team fights. So like everything feels like it's high stakes, but it's not like so lethal that you like die instantly. And I think like something about like the ability to like get into a firefight and like survive and not have a winner, but also know that you can run around a corner and probably like get someone, feels really good. Like the most recent shooter I played a lot of was Overwatch, and like the time to kill in Overwatch is like so high for a lot of heroes, especially when a lot of them have armor and like all this other stuff. Like you can like lay into someone for like 5 or 10 seconds in Overwatch and they might not be dead yet. And so it doesn't feel as lethal, but like this game, because it's over multiple rounds and there's no respawning, like they just found like the exact right time for how long it should take someone to die, that like that tightness really feels present. Like it'd feel weird if people were like elastic or whatever, had like just huge bullet sponges and you could just run around and the map felt sort of looser. But because you can like, you get somebody and get them down pretty close, they're like, fuck, just go right around this corner. And then get them and then like go on to the next area. Like it's like perfectly tuned.
I think it's also interesting to look at this game from the perspective of how diversity in these esports destined games comes across. I think Overwatch was one of the big ones, right? Where it's like D.Va's Korean and you know, all this other, like all these characters have these ethnic backgrounds and they're from diverse places. But Valorant, it does the same thing, but it takes it to, you know, it's trying to build on that legacy, which I think is, it's interesting to see how it's playing out, right? The way it looks in Valorant is still kind of a big deal, though. So like Jett is from Korea and Sage is from China and Reyna's from Mexico, and they all have their backgrounds, but it doesn't feel super, super tokenized to me for some reason. I don't know what it is.
Well, in Overwatch, it's like she's from Korea because she's got a Korean flag on her.
Yeah.
Like they like overly signal their like origins. Where yeah,
like, and they Valorant, have like the flags. They have like the flags that like the characters are from, or where the maps are that you're playing on. It's like, this is in Africa or this is in some other place, and you're just like, oh, okay, we're in a real world location and stuff. But Valorant like kind of removes that a little bit. But I kind of like that it's tied to different places so that like different countries that are playing the games can see a little bit of their own home location in the game that they are playing, because these games are played globally, but it's not like the whole point of the game. It's not the biggest part of the game. It's just like a little something in there for everyone, which I like how it's spread around.
Katie, what's your shooter you've been playing every day, every night for the past 6 months?
The same as it always has been, Call of Duty. I have not let up. I think quarantine definitely made it worse, you know, like I can't hang out with anyone, So I'm going to log into multiplayer, squad up with my friends. Like I have like a chat room, like a, or like a group chat of just like everyone I play Call of Duty with. And every now and then it's like, just like, I mean, it's not even like everyone logging on necessarily. Sometimes it's just like, oh yeah, like a couple people are logging on and we'll just do like Warzone for a bit, but it is a big group. So sometimes we do have to do like multiplayer, but, or most of the time. And I found myself lapsing back into multiplayer more than Warzone. I think because I got trapped in this cycle of just like, I want to level up this gun. I want to learn how to be good at sniping. So I'm trying to like get out of my comfort zone in a bit, like a little bit of a way, which is I feel like it's making it almost more fun because I feel like I'm getting a new sort of enjoyment out of it rather than just running assault rifle and rocket launcher, which is what I did, I feel like, for my first 6 months playing it. And yeah, I'm still having like a great time with it. Season 5 just started last week, maybe it was the week before. But actually, yeah, I think
they opened the dome.
They opened the stadium. It's still, I feel like, too messy to drop there. Like I've only dropped there a couple times and it's just like chaos immediately because everyone wants to see it. So I'm hoping like as time goes on, that will be less the case where everyone just drops in the same spot because I don't really enjoy doing the hot drop thing. And yeah, I don't know. I'm still just having a good time with it. Really not much has changed other than just things in the Warzone map. They nerfed the Foul, which I was pissed off about because that was like my favorite gun for a while, but
she was too OP, dude.
Dude, the Foul fucking rule, dude. Man, they like, well, they nerfed it and then they buffed the headshots on it, but it's like, man, that was great for like all mid-range encounters. Like it was like pretty perfect for like any circumstance except for long-range combat. So I'm pretty sad that does not take down people in like two shots anymore like it used to, which that's an over exaggeration, but it was a great gun,
dude. I can't handle the fucking scale of that stadium. That shit is crazy.
Yeah, it's huge and like it's just overwhelming and everyone drops there, right? Like for the past few weeks, so I've only dropped there a couple of times and it's impressive. They literally just made like a giant new area, which is exciting. And then there's the train, which I've seen go by, but I have never ridden on it yet.
Oh, I know there's a train. Shit.
Yeah, it's like they're going full. Apex had a train. It's like the train thing is nothing new.
I mean, Battlefield 1 had a train, if we're really going to do this.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just like a really fun, mindless shooter. Like, it's great. I hope it has legs, but investors have already said there's going to be a Call of Duty this year, so There will be a Call of Duty this year.
Yeah, they've been teasing that shit forever.
They've been teasing it. I think the Doritos bag leaked. It's like Black Ops, some, you know. So
what a world.
Yeah, the logo leaked on a Doritos bag. So it's like an open secret. They've openly, I think Activision like openly tweeted like, yes, there's gotta be a Call of Duty this year. So it's like a weird, like just announce it already. But yeah, so that'll be interesting to see how that materializes and takes shape. But yeah, I'm still playing Modern Warfare like almost every night, like pretty much every night, because I have nothing else to fucking do in my life. So that's all.
I wonder what they're going to do with Warzone, though, because
yeah,
I think like, they've already said in that tweet that it's going to be like with, or in this investors call, like in one of the tweet or the investors call, they already clarified Warzone's still going to be a thing. It's just going to be now part of this year's Call of Duty, which is just weird because that feels so tied into what Modern Warfare is.
But like, is the map going to change? Are they adding a new I'm map? Wondering. Are they going to, I don't know. And since it's free to play, it's not like they have a new product to sell people from the ground up.
It will just be probably in that Call of Duty menu still. If you buy like the new Call of Duty, but you could still just download it standalone. I'm curious how they're just going to handle it. Like, I don't know. Like, I almost don't want a new map. I really like the Warzone map. I think it's a great Battle Royale map. Maybe my favorite, honestly. It's just like, has a lot of variety. There's a lot going on. Like, I'm still not crazy about how it handles loot, but honestly, it's like I just call my loadout and just get my loadout. Like it's never like that big of an issue because like either there's a loadout drop near me or we call one in and it's like fine. And then we do two loadout drops for like one with overkill, one without, you know. But yeah, I don't know. It's crazy how much Call of Duty I played. I don't want to look at like a hour count because it's probably embarrassing.
Are
like,
you playing on console?
Yeah, I play on PS4, dude, but crossplay.
I played it on PS4 for the first time this past week. And what the fuck is up with that UI size? It is like,
what do you mean?
It's so tiny. Like I'm
I think you can adjust it.
He's like, not. Yeah, it's like, I don't know what's up, but I was like playing on.
We have
like
sensitivity way fucking off the rails. So I could be more twitchy. Do you sit like
super close to your TV?
No. Well, like kind of, but I also I'm nearsighted, so I wear glasses that help with that. So maybe that's also a factor like of it. Like
FPS skill enhancing.
I got my Call of Duty glasses. Yeah.
Like, doctor, I need to get good.
Do you remember when? Okay, listeners are not going to care about this at all. But do you remember when like Killscreen did that Warby Parker glasses collaboration? Yeah. Call of Duty should do like a glasses collaboration where it's like
they got to do the glasses with what are the people?
Has to be like Oakley looking motherfucking glasses. Like they look hideous. They have those.
There's the yellow
Gunners.
Like, yeah, Gunners. They're like the yellow.
Oh right.
Like, make your screen brighter.
Damn, I got to get those.
Isn't it the opposite? Pro. I'm not even like that.
The funniest thing about me playing so much Call of Duty is like I'm not even that good at it. Like I'm not crazy good by any measure, but I still play it nonstop. And
it doesn't matter if you're good. It matters if you're having fun.
Exactly. I'm having fun. I'm not like at the bottom of like the there's a lot of matches where I'm the top player, but I'm not like if I posted like clips of my good things, it wouldn't be nothing compared to like what actual streamers post where it's like, damn, how'd they fucking do that? I'm not anywhere near that level of good and I never will be, but I have fun with it. My friends have fun. It's basically just like an active chat room. That's pretty much how my Call of Duty time is, really.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, yeah.
I just play it alone. I gotta like figure out how to, I gotta hit you guys up next time I play.
Yeah, add me on Activision with Activision ID. Like I have crossplay on. I honestly mostly just play with PS4 players, so we end up usually turning that off. But I play with some PC people sometimes from time to time.
Yeah, I mean I have it on PS4, so maybe that way. But it's so tiny. Like I don't know. Our TV is like a normal like flat screen sized TV, but like I don't know how the fuck you're supposed to see people on this screen. They're like 10 pixels tall, and like everyone looks the same color as the trees. I don't know. I feel like a fucking boomer trying to like play this game on a TV.
No, I mean, UI size is like a real issue with AAA games. And there have been developers that have like let you adjust it, especially when it comes to AAA games being ported to Switch. That's been a major issue where it's like when you play on Switch, the text will be so fucking tiny.
Right.
And there have been games that have offered like more options and whatnot. And I hope that becomes the norm because I mean, that's just better for accessibility in general, like not just for people that are like, you know, crotchety or whatever and don't want small text.
And I don't like complain about this shit, but like
Kyle,
it's just, I'm just like playing it. I'm like, what the fuck? Like this, like I'm trying to pick up an item and like the number is so small. I'm like, what does this even say?
I mean, so I have a pretty big TV, so that also might factor into it. I don't know.
If you have like a 60-inch TV, like, yeah, I'm not talking about you. I've got like
Don't know how much it's like a big 4K fucking TV. It takes a whole wall. So it's like,
the
I have a big TV
over here with your Call of Duty. Hey, I didn't
buy
TV.
It. I didn't buy it. My partner did. So my hands are clean. But I have a big TV, so that might also help. But I don't know. Like, I've experienced. Like Tetris Effect, I had big problems with because of my nearsighted things. Like it was just like, oh, so.
I played Tetris Effect again this past, because like Josh, we talked about this last week about like, I got to turn my PS4 on. So I had a moment where I was like, well, I'm going to get set up and play some shit. So I played Warzone and then I played Tetris Effect, which is still great, but I still hate how every match that starts, the Tetris board is like far away from the camera.
Right.
So
that's,
every
it's
single
so,
time you have to move it forward. And it's
so
like,
annoying. And you
fuck?
Have to move it while you're playing. It's like so
while
such an annoying
down,
system. It's
God,
like,
it's like,
it
why?
Sucks.
Why
it's,
is it like that? Why is it not a setting? Why do I have to? Yeah. It's, in fact, it doesn't give you a second to like move the board close to the screen. It
and there's
like
some
so
that like
stupid,
get,
but
and there's
play,
some that really
so
start right away too, where it's like, oh fuck, I'm in it. Like I have no, there's
it's
no
so
luxury
stupid.
Time.
It's like, fuck, man. Anyways,
Yeah. No, that was like one of my big complaints in my review. And luckily, like, I had people being like, I had this issue too. So I didn't feel like I felt like I was the only person criticizing it when it came out for that. I was like, why is no one else annoyed with this? How far away it is. Like, for me, I'm like squinting. Like I can't fucking like see.
Perfectly frame your Tetris board, but like, just make it big. I need it to fill the screen. That's all
exactly.
I care about.
I just want it in the middle of the screen and then have the fun particle effects
the
on the side.
Like the seance, like around the edges of the board.
Yeah, just like have it on the side and then the board in the center. That's all I asked for, really. But yeah, I mean, that game is good fundamentally, but man, I'm not a fan of that feature.
One thing I really want is for shooters to figure out what they're doing when it comes to tone, at least in multiplayer modes, because this is something they still have not figured out. And sorry to go back to Valorant, but Call of Duty has this issue too, which in Valorant, they have a lot of things that make it seem like a life or death battle, right? It's like one of the character descriptions is like, Sage brings calm to a hellish battlefield, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, she's this like calm, the bastion of China is like what she's called like in her title or whatever. But it's like, okay, so we got a hellish battlefield, a lot of violence and really serious shit going on. But then you have your characters that when you do something, they're just like joking around. Or like
TikTok dance.
Yeah, they're like, you're dead or something. Like one of the characters is like one of the characters is this British dude. And when you like have a good round, he's like, is anyone else here having a good time? Just me? Oh, I'm gutted. And he says that, and it's just he's like trying to pep up his teammates with just like small talk and shit. And it's like, wait, are we on a battlefield or not here? Like, what are we doing this like jokey? Cause I like the idea of like the characters knowing that they're in like an esport game or some shit, but they don't commit to that cause they need to like boost the viability of the lore because it's like a life or death battle or whatever. But it's just like, choose one, dude, like go with one or the other. Call of Duty is kind of similar where it's like, you're dropping white phosphorus on your enemies, but then like it plays like fucking metal guitar riff when you
yeah
do.
The guitar I hate the guitar riff, but it's like such a
you just got a gas mask so you don't die in the white phospho, baby.
It feels like such a holdover from like the roots of Call of Duty like over a decade ago, and just no one thought to maybe not do that anymore. You know, it's just so fucking lame every time. It's like, and it always startles me. I'm always just like doing something in the game and I'm like, oh fuck, what the fuck. Yeah.
Like, I feel like Eddie Vedder is gonna come out and start fucking singing in my game.
That's a super good point, Katie. Like, I feel like it's easy to forget, like obviously there's like stuff like Doom and like Wolfenstein, but like AAA shooters a long time ago used to be like pretty dour. Like Medal of Honor was like it's not like a game you play because it makes you feel good. Like fucking storming Normandy during D-Day like felt like, oh, fuck. Like even like some of the earlier Call of Duty stuff, like this sort of like jingoistic American dick sucking like mode that Call of Duty's in now is just like not, like if you were like fighting a battle in like World War II, it was like, oh, this is kind of fucked. Like you're fighting people and like it's you're dying and people are kind of, you know, it's still a video game, but like it wasn't like jokey.
Isn't that more the line between multiplayer and single player though? Because like Call of Duty 4.
I don't think so.
No.
There weren't like kill streaks and like early first person shooters.
But Call of Duty 4 like had a very the first Modern Warfare had a very serious story that was like hailed for being like this great video game, but it like the multiplayer was the same thing where it just didn't take it as seriously. If you look back to like the heyday of and beginning of competitive shooters and LAN parties, they all had that kind of do whatever fun tone. Like think of Doom, fucking Tribes, Quake,
I mean the sci-fi, I guess I think it was Counter-Strike, like the military shooter, but like Counter-Strike multiplayer even is not that like
headshot.
It's not that crazy.
Headshot. Monster kill. Dude, are you kidding me?
That's not in Counter-Strike.
Dude, that was like, it was one of, they always had sound packages, sprays, all that shit. And it wasn't like a part of the game naturally, but all the servers and shit that you're playing on. But I'm saying it's part of the culture of Counter-Strike, even if it wasn't on like the default servers or whatever. I always play on servers.
But it wasn't like supported directly by the game. I think Call of Duty, like Modern Warfare, was like sort of an inflection point of that, where like that sort of shit that like grew out of mod culture, like you're talking about, got sort of incorporated directly into multiplayer modes. We were getting like crazy like tags and shit and like all these gun skins and stuff, which like, I mean, Counter-Strike added skins like a few years ago. Like that was not like a thing that's been in the game. Like 1.6 didn't have any of that shit. So like, I think it's like the mode of even operating in multiplayer was still like, obviously it's not as like somber because they're not trying to tell a story, but this sort of like, I mean, it veers a little bit into what we talked about last episode too, with like the talking about amateur play and like esports and professionalization and stuff. But like older first person shooters like didn't have progression systems. It wasn't like, you know, you leveled up your character externally and like unlocked new guns and stuff. It was mostly self-contained in a given match. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just the disconnect between like in Call of Duty when you're getting dropped off. You're getting dropped off in Warzone and it's like Operation Armistice, Verdansk. It's like this very like realistic seeming country and mission that you're doing, and then you're some fucking shirtless Russian dude with tats all over his body because you got the skin for that. That's just like a joke. Or that like fucking guy with the weird haircut that you had a picture of on your Twitter, Katie.
The haircut man. He only, so I should paint a picture for listeners. So basically this man is like, he's bald, right? But he has like the smallest little bangs on his forehead. Like he just has like a patch. Yeah. So he has like a fringe, but no other hair. It's just like hair on his forehead. I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. Like I can't wrap my head around it. It's been like driving me up the wall since like season 5 started. I'm like, how, like, who's the inspiration for this hair? Why, how this like get through? It just like looks bad. And it's like, I feel like it's just like a joke that Infinity Ward just like put in this game and hope that no one would notice. But I noticed it. It's
yeah. And it's creepy. Not like it's I don't bad like it. To have a sense of humor. And in fact, I think multiplayer shooters can be fun and just funny like that, and I think it's cool, but the dissonance with like this very serious support our troops shit behind it is just so fucking weird, dude.
It's yeah, like, it's just, I mean, I've talked on the show before, like, just there's so much grossness in Call of Duty, and it bums me out because like it's a fun game, but then it like you'll literally see just like US Army shit on the store page if you like scroll all the way down, and it's like, I don't know, it's weird. It's a weird thing to like wrestle with as someone that's like pretty progressive and that also plays a lot of Call of Duty. It just feels like these like they do not coincide whatsoever, and yet I have fun playing Call of Duty.
Recruiting tool core.
I mean, yeah, it really is.
Yep.
I played the opposite of Warzone, which is that when my PS4 was on and plugged in, I also played some Fall Guys.
Is it the opposite, though?
Is it the opposite? We could talk about it, Josh. Have you played Fall Guys?
I haven't. I downloaded it.
I have.
Have you seen Fall Guys?
I've seen it. I've seen a lot of clips of Fall Guys.
You've played Fall Guys. That's all you need to know. There's like literally no more than what you see people tweeting about.
It's fun for a bit. My biggest issue with it is I feel like, unlike other battle royales in the space, like while it's commendable that it's like, hey, we're reimagining what a battle royale can be, here's like the super family friendly, accessible, anyone can pick it up and play type of thing, but the big issue is like it's pretty much purely luck based. So it's like very frustrating in this respect of like you can mess up early on and there's like no way of coming back from it, pretty much. Like you're just kind of, you're effed. Like there's no way. And I wish there was like a route where like comeback stories in these matches was possible, but it's just not. It's just purely luck based, which I don't like. But I guess for anyone that's listening and doesn't know what Fall Guys is, it's a battle royale and it's in this obstacle course. So each match, there's like a different obstacle course you run through, or like a
well, it's like four mini battle royales.
Yeah.
Strung together.
Yeah. So it's like some are, hey, you have to like climb up this big like mountain thing while the slime is like rising. Or another one is
extreme challenge or something.
Yeah. And then there's also team battles, which is, I think, where most of my issues come in with this game, is like you're pretty much always guaranteed, I think, to get one team match, and where suddenly it bundles in, like, usually it's just you, but in the team matches, it like randomly bundles you with other people. And then you have like a communal goal to be working towards. So it could be like, you gotta like get all the balls in your color coded area of the map or whatever. So like the red side of the map. And then it's like these giant balls and you have to go and push them. And there's also like the platforming in this game is not good. It's kind of like Gang Beasts-y, so it's very physics-y, which is funny. It's fun. Like there's like, I did laugh a lot and have fun while playing and reviewing this game, but I don't know. I have like no desire to go back to it. Like, I feel like the week I spent playing it, I was like, that was fun for a bit. And that's it. Like, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah. It's like Mario Party mini games, and it's like, yeah, it's fun to play that's a good for comparison. Like 30 minutes. And it feels good for 30 minutes, but it's not going to give you more than 30 minutes worth of fun.
Okay. I got some things about this game, which is, doesn't it seem like this game is kind of an oxymoron or like a self-defeating concept for a video game? Just the idea of a casual or casually approachable battle royale is just such a self-defeating concept, in my opinion. So, if you take the concept, think about if you went to your friend's house who has Mario Kart and they just played Mario Kart for like 3 weeks straight and they have like hundreds of hours in Mario Kart and you have four people there and you just get smacked every single time because your friend's so fucking good at Mario Kart. It's like that, it can still be fun because you're playing with your friends, right? Like that's the only thing that makes it somewhat fun to play against those people who are really good at something like Mario Kart. But it's like part of the fun is supposed to be that everyone is coming to this thing and enjoying it at the same level because it's a casually approachable game. But when you put that into a battle royale where it's 100 people and you have a lot of people who are really fucking good because all they do is play Fall Guys, doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose of it being casually approachable, where it's like you're just playing with a bunch of people who are really fucking good at Fall Guys? It's like annoying.
I mean, I think the thing is, I find Fall Guys to be a hard to master because it's like so luck driven to me, at least from what I've played. Like I'm sure there's like people that have like memorized the map layouts or whatever, but it's still like you're factoring in the fact that you're running with like 40 to 60 other people at any given time. And just like sometimes you'll get like bumped the wrong way and you'll like tumble more than usual. Like, I don't know like how these elements really work together, but unlike other battle royales where there is like the luck factor in terms of like loot and, you know, where you drop and who else drops with you and that sort of thing. But this, the luck is really, it's like only luck. Like there's no skill to it really, which I think is kind of, yeah, it's like it's downfall. Like I agree with like the main point you're making where it's perhaps like the, I don't know how to word it, but yeah,
I think that's like, I think what they're doing is that they're like, I mean, it definitely feels like the sort of games as a service type model, and they're already talking about seasons and the menus and stuff. And I think that like the core games, like the mini games themselves, are like really simple. They're like basically obstacle courses, most of them. Some of them have like a little, some of them like slightly more mechanics, like steal a tail or something. But like, even then, like it's like one or two things. And so I think their idea is just like pump out so much new stuff that like it doesn't matter. And I think like they're going to find that their season length right now is probably way too long. I think it's like 50 days or something right now. And it's like, no, you gotta do something on like a 3 week time frame with this sort of thing and just like crank out new stuff. Cause I think you're kind of right, Josh. Like, it's easy to play this game and then be like, okay, well, everyone's really good and I'm bad. And it's not like playing the game is not so intrinsically fun that you feel compelled to like continually play it more. You just sort of like, well, yeah, I did that and I'm going to go play Warzone now or something where I can like do more stuff.
And I would say that while it might not be a 100% skill-based game, there is absolutely skill. Because I went online to look at, I Google Fall Guys, and I want to see like if the maps are randomized or if it's like a consistent thing every time you play the game. And when I type in like Fall Guys, the first results are always like Fall Guys tips, Fall Guys guides, Fall Guys map layouts, Fall Guys strategies. There's all this fucking content out there for people who don't just want to play the game. They want to like get good at Fall Guys. And this was a conversation we sort of had a bit in our Discord about tryhards, because there was a video that circulated of this person who was like insanely good at Fall Guys because they were making every jump like completely precisely, that like to the point where they were just so far ahead they couldn't be touched by the other players, as happens in Mario Kart. Like, you can be so far ahead that just nobody can catch you, even if they blue shell you like three times. And I think that that is kind of possible to an extent in Fall Guys, although it's harder to keep that going because there are some rounds where you can't do that. Like, there's one where there's like doors and everybody has to go through, try to get through the doors, but some of the doors don't open. So you just hit a dead end wall. So that shit's just luck straight up. But even then, I'm sure there's like, your character on this round should be here. Here's where you should look to overtake. Like, make sure that you have someone else checking the doors for you, and that you can, once you verify that it's an open door, like you go through it right then and there. And there's like an optimal way to play the game that a lot of people just won't know, and which they're not knowing makes the game kind of more fun because it gives them a shot. It gives everybody a shot because everybody doesn't know what they're doing. But when you have these education systems that are online to teach you how to get better at the game, how to maximize your chances of winning the game, it just works against that purpose a bit. And I don't think necessarily that that makes Fall Guys a bad game. I think that it's cool that it's trying this. And I think that it's like, it's an interesting experiment, and that it'll bring new people into the fold of multiplayer gaming because of that. But, you know, if their matchmaking doesn't keep up, if they don't keep it to something like where you're just playing with people who are playing it for the same reasons, on the same level as you are, then it might make it a lot more annoying of an experience, especially to people who are trying it for the first time because they heard it was a game that you could get into even if you don't play video games that much, you know?
I mean, I think like, you think about like, what's the alternative for someone that's like that, right? It's like, oh, you don't play video games, you want to play some sort of like easy multiplayer thing. It's like, well, you could play Warzone, or you could like, maybe you could do Mario Kart, but that's like six people and you'll like really lose. So like, it's actually hard to think of other games that are like truly low stakes multiplayer like this. And I think that's maybe one of its like major benefits, where like, obviously, like if you're on the internet and you're searching about Fall Guys stuff, you're probably like a kid who's like trying to be good to like post a video to like Twitter or some shit where they're like, look how good I am at Fall Guys. But like, for a lot of people, I mean, it's free on PS Plus, so like you can just get it and be like, I want to run around and jump on these like, you know, candy colored worlds, and you can just do that and not like, it's like possible for you to like not come in just like totally last place because of how much randomness there is. Where like, if you're like a new player and you're playing Mario Kart, like you're going to be in last place like probably the whole duration of that session that you're playing in. So I think like in that way, like it's like super nice that there's sort of like a more low stakes way to engage with like multiplayer play, even if it's sort of on the opposite end of like higher end play, doesn't like, it almost like resists mastery. Like there are like things you can do in the game, but like fundamentally you're playing with an imperfect character that like is hard to control and seems to not actually respond to your controls a little bit. So I think the game itself is like trying to work against people being good at it. Whether that makes for like a compelling play experience for like more than, you know, 30 or 40 minutes on a given night, like I don't know, but that game sold like a fuck ton of copies by now, so I think they don't care.
Yeah, it seems like a bit of a meme / flavor of the week type game, but
man, this is,
if it proves me wrong,
this is my other thing, dude. Like I'm just waiting for like I think we're in the sort of the last dregs of a specific type of game development model, and I'm like waiting for someone like Twitch or like a streamer to commission a game studio to like build a game for them or their audience. Like this idea that like the studios themselves are fronting games that get churned through like Twitch player bases, where like imagine like Twitch approaches a game studio and says like, hey, like we'll give you this much money to make this game. These 10 streamers that are all Twitch partners have agreed to play it exclusively for 2 weeks. Then we'll see what happens. Like that feels like the future, and Fall Guys feels like it starts to like, Fall Guys is sort of showing what the outcome of that looks like, but from a different angle. Cause like everyone is playing it, but it's sort of like, it's not because they like struck these deals, but I can just start to see a future where games are not being made for like the average player. Games are being made for people who will stream them and then basically trickle down to see if they'll like catch a player base. And I think people do that stuff now, but whether or not Twitch or like a streamer is directly funding the development of a game, like not yet.
I mean, Ubisoft did just release Hyperscape, which is their battle royale, like a couple weeks ago, and that game is built for streamers. Like it 100% like has a bunch of streamer like functionality. There's like weird, like I actually haven't played it because it just didn't look interesting to me personally, but I like it's like designed for streamers specifically. Like when they had their big event, they had a bunch of streamers come and test it out, and there's like special functionality only for people that are like Twitch streaming it and whatnot, which I find very interesting. And I think we're going to see more games having more than just, you know, here's a mode that's better for streaming or something like that, but like more integration. Kind of like one of you might know the name of this, but there's like a functionality that people can put onto like their Twitch streams where like the audience is like impacting the game they're playing. There's like a specific name for it, and I cannot remember what it is.
It's like crowd control or something, isn't it?
Yeah, that sounds right. But that's like an interesting thing that is big, where people are, you know, it's like, hey, if I get this amount of donate or subscriptions, this will like fuck up my game in this way. And you know, that sort of thing, which I find like a fun little thing, especially for like, there's a good speed run. I think at last AGDQ, maybe the one before that, maybe
the Yoshi's Island thing.
No, it wasn't Yoshi.
Oh, no,
it
was, I was watching. No, yeah.
But yeah, it was like a crowd. Maybe it was Link to the Past, actually. But it was like a crowd control thing, and it was just like really fun to watch like this speedrunner just, you know, fumble through it as best they could while like donations really fucked it up for them. But like that, like that sort of stuff's really fun to me. Even if someone doesn't, honestly, like I don't watch a lot of streamers. Like totally, like it's just not my thing. I feel like I'm a weirdo compared to everyone else I know that has like their go-to streamers and everything. And I just don't really pay attention to that type of stuff, which is definitely a blind spot for me. But like I find that sort of community, like streamers working with their community or integrating their community into like the games themselves, to be really fascinating and really cool. And I honestly think that's going to be a big thing as we go into next gen. I think more developers are going to be focusing on, well, how will streamers engage with this game? How can we make this easier for them to engage with their audience? And how do we make this more fun for them to engage with it? So like thinking of like streamers and streamers' audiences first, rather than like their own native gaming audience that are going to buy the game.
Yeah.
Weird world we live in.
It is a weird world. Like, I mean, when I'm thinking about it, it's like I watch like Giant Bomb, which they're technically streamers, I guess, especially now that they're all remote. And yeah, that's like pretty much it. Like I'm very boring compared to most people that like have their like go-to people. I've tried, and they're fun for background noise, I guess, but I just can't focus on it.
I love streamers.
I'm waiting for you to become your destined influencer self, Josh. Uh-huh.
I got another monitor so I could stream better, but I haven't streamed in a bit because streaming for my PC is a little bit difficult, and I got kind of bored with Ghost of Tsushima, so...
Same.
Yeah, I don't...
I had a good time. The time I spent with it was fun. As we discussed on our Ghost of Tsushima. I put more in that. But So I was like in Act 2. I was like on the second area. And then I didn't play it for a few days. And then I was just like, I don't think I'm going to play it again.
Games, you know, I just kind of like fell off it. Boring once you've played it for enough time. It's just like, we're just going to do the same thing.
It's a lot of repetitive tasks. And then when you go into that second area, it's like, do the same thing. like recruit a bunch of people for the next castle you're going to overtake. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I wanted to see some of the side stories through, because I think some of the side stories are actually like pretty good. Like the Lady Moscow stuff and like Ishikawa had like a really compelling plot, but like the main story, I just had no desire. And the actual act of playing it was just boring. Like, it just got so boring. And then I just never went back to it. I don't know.
I feel like goes. That's like a prime candidate for like a, oh shit, that came out of 2020.
Maybe if it fades, I feel like it might not.
I don't think it'll fade, especially because that co-op thing's coming out. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot more games that came out in the early half of this year that qualify for that more.
Yeah, I feel like the year just started. I'm like, what came out this year? What's even what?
Right.
What life was I living in January of 2020 before everything shut down?
God, I don't even. It feels like
about time before the internet. You're like, what did I do before the internet existed?
Right. I feel like our generation's weird because like we grew up where there weren't smartphones and the internet was just coming into prominence in a way. And it's kind of weird how kids just don't have that technology is growing experience anymore. You know, like I remember having a shitty flip phone and like a Sidekick, you know, but
hell yeah,
no one knows what a Sidekick is anymore. Like,
WT667.
I had this like cute little Nokia pink flip phone. It was like my favorite phone I ever had. It was so
cute. Josh
had
a chocolate.
I didn't have a chocolate.
I feel like but you wanted one, I can tell.
Kind of wanted one, yeah.
Yeah.
I got a Sidekick only because my friend had upgraded her phone. So I got her old Sidekick and it was like a struggle to get it on my mom's like phone plan. And that's my Sidekick story. And I feel like I got like after it was cool. Like it wasn't even like that cool anymore.
I remember like there was always like one kid with a BlackBerry too. And you're like,
yeah, it's like you don't need a BlackBerry. Yeah. How old are you?
In middle school, you got BlackBerry?
Running a business? What the fuck? Yeah. BlackBerries. Do you think those are still
fine? If we're going to do this, do you remember when that fucking Elder Scrolls game came out for phones? They released like a... I don't remember what it was called. Damn it. I think it was like Elder Scrolls Arena. No, Arena was the first. Fuck, I gotta find this. Yeah, Bethesda made like an Elder Scrolls game that
I had
was
no
like
idea this
Nokia
was a thing.
Flip phone format.
Oh.
I want to say it was Snake. Called Arena.
It's like Snake, but
it's called Snake, yeah.
Elder Scrolls Snake.
Elder Scrolls Mobile.
Well, no, I'm saying like it's like Snake, but it's Elder Scrolls. It's Skyrim. But like, you know how you played Snake on your phone? Like playing
I think it was like
But Skyrim. So very pixelated.
Is Spear or mobile one games bit. Not as cool anymore?
There was I was thinking about this recently. Mobile games are weird because they had this like peak era where it was like Candy Crush and Angry Birds and everyone was playing phone games. And I feel like everyone still plays phone games, but no one talks about them anymore. Like they're just kind of like a quiet everyday thing. And like there's still like developers doing cool stuff. Like Apple Arcade's had a bunch of cool exclusives like over the past year, which are now leaving this exclusivity. Like Grindstone's coming to Switch now, which is crazy. But yeah, I mean, I would say that phone games are maybe not in fashion anymore. It's hard to convince someone to like pay attention to a phone game, I think.
Yeah, and it's weird because I do remember like people playing a lot of phone games that I wasn't used to seeing playing phone games, but now I don't hear about it as much. Maybe it's just become part of their daily media appetite that they just don't talk about because it's just something they do. But
I think that's probably a big part of it.
Maybe, yeah. But you would think that there would at least be a couple hit games that like everyone's talking about. But like Flappy Bird or something.
Was that for a bit?
But maybe in your circles, but I don't know anybody who played Grindstone who wasn't a gamer.
Already a known gamer.
Yeah.
Fair.
Whereas Candy Crush.
I think it's like, it's also really big in like China. Like mobile gaming is like giant in China.
Oh, it's true.
Like
everyone American plays PUBG or Fortnite. PUBG is huge on mobile. PUBG mobile is like fucking massive. And Call of Duty mobile, I think it's like the biggest mobile game in the world now. Which is
also
nuts.
Actually... Today, speaking of mobile game stuff, Dots of like Dots, Two Dots and stuff.
Yeah.
They were acquired by Take-Two.
What?
So like, yeah, for like $190 million or something. So like Take-Two is like trying to get in the mobile game. So GTA
That's
Mobile.
That's so crazy.
I mean, mobile games are still profitable. I mean, they like, there are still, I don't know, I feel like a lot of the mobile games I play are not free-to-play type mobile games, you know? It's like, I play Bird Alone. I'm going through my phone right now, so I'm, like, staring at my phone. And, yeah, I re-downloaded Fortnite because now you can't download Fortnite, and I wanted to feel cool.
Gotcha games.
So I re-downloaded it. Yeah, gacha games. Gotcha like, games. Love Nikki is technically a gacha game in a way. Like, there's outfits you spin
Lucky
for.
Lucky 7.
Fire Emblem Heroes is pretty big for, or I played that for a bit. That was pretty fun. That was a gacha game, 100%.
Listeners, do you play mobile games? How do you feel that they're doing? Are they still on top of the world and going to be the next big thing that takes out regular video gaming as we know it? Let us know in the comments / subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/badend to become a Discord subscriber. Shouts out to all the people in our Discords. We love you. Can I talk about anime?
Yeah, let's do it.
Always.
Yes. I've been waiting for this moment for such a long time. Okay, so those who know me know that I am a shonen boy through and through. I love... Does Evangelion count as shonen? It totally is, right? Sort of. It's like, that's like a reductive way to put it, but like technically it fulfills all the prerequisites.
Yeah. I don't know what like the criteria for shonen is.
It's like aimed at young boys.
You got some fights. You got like heartwarming... like
mildly like, problematic sexualization of the women around the boy.
I mean, not so much in shonen, I feel like, but I mean, it depends on the show. Maybe it depends on the show. You got some like slightly homoerotic relationships between all the male cast,
themes of friendship,
easy to ship,
hard work, untapped potential,
teenagers. And,
yeah, sure.
So
Evangelion,
yeah. A couple shows. I've finally caught up with My Hero Academia, which...
I don't like My Hero. I've tried.
I was not a big fan, and I was just kind of watching it passively for the first season. I actually really liked the first couple episodes, because it was just so... It wears its emotions on its sleeve so much. Like,
oh, it's
every
so
character,
earnest.
There's like...
It's so earnest.
Every episode, there's like some character just sobbing, like, I should have done differently. I should have been better. I should have been a better friend. And it's just like, I was like, damn, this show really goes all out. There's just people crying. Like, the main character cries in like every episode. But it got to the second season, and the second season starts out with like a tournament, a school tournament where all of the... students are like fighting each other to see who's like at the top of the class or whatever. And I got so bored, I just stopped watching. And that was season 2, and they just finished like season 4, I think. And
I think they're on 5.
Maybe.
I don't remember.
I don't remember, even though I literally just finished watching it. But because I marathoned the episodes so quickly, I don't remember like the seasons. But holy shit, season 3 and 4 are utterly lit. Like, there's something.
3 is the one with like the ends in the big fight, right?
Yeah. Ends with a big fight.
3, it's not the one where they're in, they just run down the hall for the whole season.
Oh, so you have, so you've seen My Hero Academia?
Yeah, dude.
Oh,
you think I'm fucking around? I've seen all of My Hero. Yeah.
Wow. That's surprising. Yeah. But,
yeah,
it's the one, I don't want to spoil anything, but. Yeah, there's some big fights where the thing happens that I call shonen ecstasy, where they have been building up this tension of like the bad guys are really strong and like impossible to defeat. And the heroes are just like trying to prepare themselves, and they're grinding, and there's like 3 episode montage of them training and all this shit. One of them is like incapacitated for whatever reason. And then the battle happens, and the main character comes out with some ace in the hole that you would never expect. That's like the most badass thing ever. And they're just fulfilling like all of their potential. And you finally get the culmination of just opportunity, growth, friendship, good versus evil. Just all the shit comes together and it explodes in shonen ecstasy. And the shonen ecstasy moments in My Hero Academia are pretty fucking great. I gotta say, they're also great in Haikyuu, which is the volleyball one. If you like shonen, watch that shit, because holy crap. I started working out again and exercising regularly because I was so inspired by the main character of Haikyuu. This is real. I was like, I have to be like Hinata. I have to be like him. He works so hard. And
unrealistic abs, like in fucking Free, where they all have like 12 packs.
The swimming one. I started watching. I did something that I never thought I would do, which is start watching an anime with a shit ton of episodes, and that is Hunter, Hunter x Hunter.
It's not called Hunter x Hunter.
I think technically it's Hunter, but I like calling it Hunter x Hunter.
Say Hunter x Hunter. But yeah. Dude, that's so many episodes.
I think there's why like 160.
That? Yeah, no.
But
you don't do that.
Terrible. I mean, Hero.
That's
right
so
now
many.
Is like, there's a lot in Hero. It's like double Hero. Hero's like 70 or 80, I think.
It's a lot,
like,
but
I feel like the most I'll go is like Full Metal Alchemist, which is like 50 to 60.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like my that's my cap. I cannot go longer than that.
Actually, I think there's like 140 something episodes total of Hunter. It's pretty cool. I don't think that the Shonen ecstasy is as pronounced. I haven't had that many like, oh my fucking God moments. Like, I have a lot of holy shit moments in some of the... Demon Slayer, Kimetsu no Yaiba, holy shit, that's got one of the best shonen ecstasy moments. I'm like getting giddy just thinking about it. But I don't know if you've seen Demon Slayer, but if you've ever felt shonen ecstasy and have enjoyed it, you gotta watch Demon Slayer, because it's mind-boggling. The animation is so fucking good, like holy shit.
That's the shit that like,
I think a tattoo artist recommended that anime to me.
Dude, Demon Slayer is... it might be my favorite shonen.
It sucks though, because like I think something like that and like Hero, like one of the issues is that you pay the tax of that ecstasy for so long. It's like Hero is so bad about like doing a cool scene and then showing it to you like for the next 4 episodes and just having like really boring people like talking to each other in classrooms most of the time, where like it feels like a slog sometimes. You're just like, come on, like I've seen how good this show can be and now we're like,
yeah,
we're doing this.
But that's what it takes seasons, like to build.
I don't know, it feels like a abusive relationship. You're like, just give me the shit I want. I don't need this like titillation.
Yeah, there's like a manipulation type thing to it.
I don't have the patience
for
that.
The highs are so high, like especially for Hero, like when there's like these big battles, you're like, fuck, that's so cool. Like, I still think about like the season. I kind of like the season where they're in the stadium fighting each other, but there's like that sequence of animation in like the last episode where those two characters are fighting and they do like some crazy animation shit where they like up the frame rate to like 60 pure hand animated frames of animation as someone like blasts like a beam of fire through this thing. And it's like, it's like, it's truly, truly, it's actually, we were talking about Decadence earlier. It's like that scene at the first episode of Decadence when they like fire the fucking weapon. It's like similar vibes to that, where it's like, all of a sudden we get this like high resolution, like, alternate universe where anime is too much money and time, like beautiful animation. You're like,
I think that's the reason why I like Demon Slayer, is just because every episode, even when it's not super action oriented, the animation is just beautiful. Like, just the art style is just amazing just to look at. I just think of still frames from that show where there's nothing going on in my mind all the time. And when it does climax, it's great. There's one thing I'll say, if anybody ends up watching Demon Slayer as a product of this, there's a couple episodes where one really fucking annoying character is like at the center, and all it is just like him yelling. They're all just yelling at each other, the main characters. And it's like the most annoying stretch of anime I've ever watched. And I stopped watching it, and someone was like, oh, you should just keep watching. Just trust me. And then after that is like when it gets good. But I honestly think you can just skip those fucking episodes that I'm talking. Like, if you just see characters just yelling at each other for the entire episode and it starts happening multiple times, or just like skip an episode or two and like look it up on Wikipedia or some shit until they go into the Spider Forest. That's what I'll say. Because that's where it gets. The Spider Forest is where the show Chef's Kiss times 1,000. But yeah.
I just feel like I don't have the patience for shows that are slow anymore. I don't know. Like, it's like a weird attention span thing. Like, I rewatched Cowboy Bebop like a few months ago, and that show's like so well paced, does fun like flavor of the week type or monster of the week type stuff, and has an overarching story that's like engaging, and it's like 25 episodes and done. And like, I feel like my problem with like we started watching like One Piece because my partner got into the manga, and it's like entertaining, I guess, but it's just like knowing how many episodes there are, I'm like, I cannot, there's no way this is justified to me. I don't know. It's like, but maybe it's like I should be viewing anime more as like a crime procedural. I don't know. Maybe that's like my problem. Like,
it's like a soap opera is the way that I've sort of come to like accept it, where it's like, it's going to take a lot of time to get there. There's going to be recurring characters. The stakes are always going to feel like, it feels like, what was it called? Like in like the movie Dunkirk, they use this tone that's got the specific name where like the progression of the tone always sounds like it's building, but it actually loops back on itself.
Oh, like so the barbershop effect?
Maybe. I don't know what that is, but it might be the same thing. And I feel like anime is similar, where it's like, it always feels like the stakes are being upped, and then like the big fight will happen, and then somehow the next episode they're like back at school.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've just like incorporated the stakes into their body, but then it's somehow like lower stakes again, but also it feels more tense.
I also love the form of anime and how it's so, it's just down to do kind of whatever. They're not bound by like, well, we need to come up with 26 episodes every season, like The Office or right. something like that. Where with Demon Slayer, for instance, the first, all that's out is one season, and it's like 23 episodes or something like that. And then next, for the next part of the story, it's going to be a movie. It's like,
sounds like Sound Euphonium, right. My favorite slice of life anime about a marching band. And then they did like a movie sequel thing.
And then a
spinoff.
In Hunter x Hunter, like Hunter x Hunter, the first season's like 26 episodes. The second one's like 13. And then it's like 12 or something. And then the season I'm on now is like 50 episodes. Yeah, it's like, just because the story of the arc of that season is longer than the others. So they're just the little self-contained stories of, you know, these main characters going through stuff. It adjusts based on what they're experiencing and what they're going through, as opposed to like that being constructed the other way around. You know, I think that's like one of the things that makes Avatar The Last Airbender cool, is that it's just three seasons and they're cool with that. Like, they're like, yep, yeah, we're just going to have three seasons. Each one covers a specific thing, a specific element, and that's it. And I love that about it. I've also been watching this other new anime called Decadence. Kyle watched the first couple episodes of that. There's only like 7 episodes out right now because it's still airing. But if I say what happens in the second episode, it's a spoiler, because the show 180s in such a way that it's just impossible to predict what's going to happen, like just in the first couple episodes. And a lot of times it's a spoiler to say that something, there's a twist, you know, but I don't think so with this series, because it's just so drastic of a change that you could just not see it coming. So check that out. Deca-Dense. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool show. And inventive. It's from the person who directed like Mob Psycho 100, I believe. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, and Tokyo or Japan Sinks 2020 is cool. It's on Netflix.
Watch that.
It's only like 12 episodes.
I still have to finish Dorohedoro. I watched like the first 7 or 8 episodes.
I watched the first couple.
I tried to get into Beastars or whatever, and it was just so boring. So boring. And what sucks is I feel like when I was watching, I was like, wow, it's like the first 3D anime that looks really good. Like visually, I was really into it, but it's so fucking boring. And No, I didn't.
It was like pretty good 3D, but
yeah, I think 3D anime is definitely getting better. I still prefer 2D animation 100%, but Beastars, I feel like, was the first 3D anime I've watched where I wasn't just like annoyed with how it looked all the time. Like it plays with depth in a really cool way. But man, the plot was just, and the characters were just so boring.
You know what anime?
I think Dorohedoro is actually 3D too.
Has great pacing, and is a
DBZ,
and is a shonen, and is not Mysterious Girlfriend X. Gurren Lagann.
Oh, great show!
Yeah,
great show. If you haven't seen,
I need to watch Studio Trigger's new and they have what is it BNA? It's on. That's
I've seen a few episodes of
Decadence. I thought Decadence was Trigger. It's got like a Trigger-ish vibe, but it's like less porny than like their stuff. So I was like, I don't know if it's
BHA is like right, relatively unporny.
Like Decadence. I don't know. I'm excited so far with how much non like porny bullshit there is in Decadence after having watched the first two episodes.
I have yet to see porny fan service-y stuff.
Actually, that makes me want to watch it. Because I think that's something that also turns me off is I don't have the stomach for fan service anymore like I used to. Like when I was younger, I would just be like, yeah, fuck it, whatever. But I think like now that I'm older, I just like don't care about that type of stuff at all. So I'm like, every time it's in something, I'm like, I feel like Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid was kind of like the last instance where I was just like, I'm done with this type of shit, you know, in a way like that show gets really pervy with like kids and that really like just made me so uncomfortable. And I feel like it's been hard for me to give new anime a shot ever since then, because it's like, I just think it's going to do like a weird left turn where I'm going to be like, I don't feel comfortable watching this.
Hunter X Hunter does a thing where it's like they have sexy women and sexy guys.
Okay. You know, where sexy, it's like, as long it's if like you're rounding it out and they're of legal age,
fan
sure.
service. Yeah, it Why is. Not? That's yeah. how Hunter x Hunter is. And I will say another thing I like about Hunter is that it's very parable like. The characters, there's a lot of like little lessons that each of the characters have for themselves. And I like that there's these little universes within each character that they tell something, a little different story with each character. It's also a very situational anime. It's like, I was thinking of like sitcoms, but this is like a situational thriller type show where it's like, it reminds me of like 999 or Danganronpa type thing where it's like, you're in this situation and you need to get out and it's a battle of wits, and they have to spend all this time explaining these systems of like, this is how this power works, or this is how this room works. Your challenge is to get out of it. And there's just all this stuff happening around these situations that they find themselves in, which is it's cool in its own right. But sometimes I just prefer the Shonen Ecstasy, baby. But it's starting to come out because I'm reaching the conclusion of the largest arc of the series. The Chimera Ant arc. The Chimera Ants are like, it's like ants that when they eat other things, they incorporate their genes into their offspring. So they come to a point where they become like all powerful beings, and they have to fight the main characters have to fight them. It's pretty cool. It sounds utterly absurd, but, It's on that last 50 fucking episodes or some shit. So it's, it better be good. There's this, there's like a 4-episode stretch that covers like 2 minutes of real time that I just got through. It's kind of funny.
That reminds me of like the Hero episode of them running through the hallway or the season. It's just like, why are we really just going to run through this hallway for
Haikyuu season 3 is one game of volleyball. The entire third season is one single
That's what
game
I'd like to hear.
But it's awesome because it's, you know, it's like a lot of flashbacks, a lot of lessons learned in small moments and stuff. It's cool.
You guys want to wrap this up?
Yeah, I'm down to wrap.
Yeah.
Wait, we did get one question from the Discord. Okay. Sorry. I was going to. Damn. All right. From MXMX, they ask, in honor of GDQ, which is Games Done Quick, if your job had to be speedrunning, which would you each speedrun? Katie.
Like if my job was to speedrun one game?
Yeah.
I feel like I would choose the first Kingdom Hearts because I feel like I know that game in and out already because I played it so much when I was younger. And like I literally did like a 24-hour stream of it when I was like in high school back in the day. And this is like before Twitch. This is like, I don't even remember what we use. This is for some like charity thing for school. But yeah, so I think I would do the first Kingdom Hearts because I just, there's a lot to work toward in that game, which is fun. So it's like, there's a lot of different alternate types of speed runs I could theoretically do. I could do like a, you know, any percent run. I could do like, I'm getting that Ultima Keyblade, I'm going to beat Sephiroth type of run. Like there's a lot of like options there that would make that, give that variety and make that fun, I think.
Josh.
I'm not sure. Maybe Celeste.
Ooh.
Probably Celeste. Celeste looks fun to speedrun. I even tried speedrunning it myself, but I suck.
It's hard. That game's fucking hard.
I beat it in like an hour, and that was my best.
Oh my, that's fast, dude. I cannot get close to that.
Yeah, I beat it. Like, I was able to, like, beat it multiple times in a day, and I was like, I don't know how, like, people are beating that shit in like 20, 25 minutes and stuff. And I'm just like,
it's nuts.
How do you do that? You have to be really perfect.
It's fun. Yeah. It's fun to watch speedruns of that game. That game's just like really nutso. It's crazy.
It feels so good when you're just zooming through. Oh man. But yeah, probably Celeste.
I think I would do one of the early Mario games or like Dust Force.
I was thinking of Dust Force too.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. Dust Force fucking rips.
I love the speedruns of it.
Someone asked me if I think that PC gaming is as good in 2020 as I thought it would be in 2010.
Better.
Yes.
It's better.
Better. Well, it's better and worse. The worst part is that like fucking gamer culture has gotten into my PC gaming culture. So now there's like light up fucking keyboards everywhere. PC gaming used to be gross. It was weird. Not like you couldn't go to Best Buy and buy like weird PC bullshit. It kind of went away and it came back. It's weird.
Tired of this PC bullshit.
I don't like the fact that like when I look at a motherboard, I have to decide what type of camo I want on it. You know, like that's bullshit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Man, Oswald, I can't wait to build a PC next year. It's going to be a fucking hideous. Yeah.
But now you
hideous
can make
piece
a
of
minimalist PC, you know?
It's true. I do have I actually have a minimalist PC. I have an ITX board. Or excuse me, micro ITX board.
I have an Alienware. old PC.
Thoughts on pricing of next gen releases of Control and NBA 2021. Recall that next gen consoles can play non cross gen PS4 games but won't spice up the polygon. So I guess it's that Control is cross gen only with the new special edition for $40 and 2K21. $60 for PS4, $70 for PS5, and $100 for cross-gen special edition. That sounds like it's going to introduce a lot of frustrated parents at Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking of. Is like, well, I feel like just like the naming consoles are already confusing. Like my coworker Mike, he wrote this good article about like, because people are like, oh, like the Xbox Series X is a confusing name. And same with like the Series S, which is like the thing that leaked recently where they're doing a cheaper model, theoretically. They haven't announced it yet, so who knows what this model will look like, really, and how it's going to confuse parents. But I'm like, I feel like people are already fucking confused. They already think like Nintendo games can play on a PlayStation because parents don't know these things. They're not like entrenched in like console exclusives or like what's the cool console or what their kids even want. Like they'll buy the wrong game all the time. So it's like, I feel like, yeah, it's going to introduce a lot of headaches. And I feel like there's so much, because there's not like a standard for this, there's going to be like a lot of weird stuff, like the Control Ultimate Edition and the 2K sports games being $70 on next gen platforms. So there's gotta be like a weird period where just like there's no standard for anything, really.
I'm just waiting for like, there's gonna be like some like shitty mom who's like thinks like a total like speak to the manager type, where she's gonna be like, okay, I gotta get my kid NBA 2021, and they're like, all right, well the one for PS5 is $70. What does he have? And she's like, well he's got a PS5, but the PS4 one's $60. And like, oh yeah, well this is the GameStop employee, I'm imagining. They're like, yeah, well, the PS4 one doesn't work on the PS5. And she's like, I bet my kid's console will run it. And she'll like buy it for $60. Just like bullshit like that is totally going to happen where they're like, yeah, I'll buy the cheaper one. It's the same game.
Exactly. It's, yeah. And we don't even know how big of a difference these like small next gen bumps are going to be, really. It's like maybe loading times might be better. There might be more particles on screen. I'm trying to think of like Control specifically. It's like, it might perform better. That's like the big thing is like, Control perform like shit on console, like pure shit. Like that game, it, on my pro, it was horrible. It was just like the frame rate was so bad. So it's like, I'm hoping this next gen bump is like drastic. So that's solved, but it's, yeah, it's like a weird situation. Like, I feel like a year from now, we'll have a better idea of how these pricing things and like Xbox is doing their smart delivery thing where things will get like a free bump. But it seems like not all games are like opting into that and are trying to monetize that. So it's like, it's a really weird area right now, or era. I don't know.
Next question. Favorite video game president? That woman from Vanquish.
I don't think I have one. I'm trying to think of one.
Just the Colonel from Metal Gear. He's not a president, but Colonel from Metal Gear.
What would you prefer to see as the next indie game wave? I'm talking spirits, Native American culture, white blob character stuff. What's the indie space trend you'd want as an aesthetic?
I don't want an indie aesthetic.
Oh.
You know, just like come out with new shit. Stop biting each other.
Like, I would take some like truly grim dark shit that's like not
Darkest like, Dungeon.
Just like Dark Souls. Yeah, Darkest Dungeon sort of getting there. You know, it's got like the Lovecraft thing going on. Like, I think something like Path of Exile is like, I don't even like that a lot, but I'm just like, I feel like I've seen so many games about hugging and kissing and loving and depression that I want to see like just some like, I don't know.
Less stuff that sells itself on being like wholesome and or emotional. And just like, yeah, if you're going to do it, just do it. Stop like making it a big thing.
Or no indie game aesthetic.
Yeah.
Two more questions. With things like baseball and the NBA playoffs happening, how has your sports viewing changed, if at all, during the pandemic? I watch less.
But
yeah, I mean, I have not watched the NBA at all since they've done this comeback. I honestly don't even know what's going on, which is rare for me. I usually follow the NBA. And I don't know. It's like a weird thing. I've seen clips and I'm like, this is just strange. I don't like this digital crowd they got going on.
It's very weird. It doesn't feel real. But I will watch more because the playoffs are starting now. So I'll be watching.
Last question is, who is the Stephen Smith of esports? I don't actually know who Stephen A.
Smith.
Who's Stephen A. Smith?
He's the guy... He's just like this announcer who's just constantly...
Oh, is he the guy that has those meme pictures with like the orange text below him? It's like an older red-haired dude.
No. He's a black dude. He's always just saying like the craziest shit. I would say in esports, maybe like probably like Slasher, you know? Because like a lot of the stuff Slasher says is just like, okay, what you're saying, there's probably some truth to it, but you also sound like a douchebag when you're saying it, you know?
Yeah, Slasher's got like, he sort of talks like a tech VC a little bit.
He
like this sort of like self-appointed seriousness about he doesn't have.
He's so self-aggrandizing, dude. It comes through in every word he says somehow. Like, I don't understand how you can possibly come off as that self-aggrandizing just in a fucking tweet. Like, how many characters are in a tweet and you're sounding like that, your ego's that fucking big? That's like his whole character and persona or whatever, sure, but I mean, it's hard to see as a persona when like that's been his whole thing since the very beginning. Like, it seems like that's kind of just how he is. And you know, he breaks some good stuff and some of his opinions like are good and I agree with. But also, he just says some stuff where you're just like, really, dude? Like, I would feel bad if I supported this guy, even when he says stuff that I agree with, because he's such an asshole about it sometimes, you know? He's like not the worst person who is nonetheless very hard to root for, which I think is kind of Stephen A. Smith thing as well.
All right.
Okay, I think that wraps up the episode.
That's the questions.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to our listeners for submitting questions. Katie's power did not go out just yet. We were expecting that to happen, so we got through an episode.
I was so nervous. I was like, we were going to do one question and Kyle just kept asking questions. And I was like, I don't like, I want to wrap this up because I'm scared my power is going to go out any fucking second.
It'll probably go out. I totally forgot about that.
It will probably go out like right after we're done. Yeah.
But yes, we are Bad End Podcast. We are part of Super Culture Network, which also contains Bullet Points and Savoir Faire. Go check those things out. You can Google those. We are on Patreon, on patreon.com/badend. You should rate us and review us on iTunes. That is very, very helpful. Kyle forgot to do his plug at the beginning of the episode. So, James, if you're listening,
James,
go review the show.
It, man.
Go review the show, homie.
What are you doing?
What are you doing, James? Go review it. And then we are also emailable at gmail.com. Sorry, badendpod@gmail.com. Badendpod@gmail.com. I did it out of order, so I'm like all thrown off. Twitter.com/badendpodcast. Rate us, review us on iTunes. I already said that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Probably missed something, but we love y'all. Hang out with us on Discord, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Later.
See ya.